Welcome to Forums for a Future. No, it's not 1960. It's nearly half a century later. But, once again, there are warnings of danger all over the land. It's time, once again, to reclaim a future that is free of war, racism, and poverty. A brighter future of promise and hope. I am Edward Renner, your host for a series of civic discussions, forums, if you will, toward creating a more viable future. The complete outline for the podcast series and all of the reference materials are available on the Forums for a Future homepage on my website at www.kerenner.com. It is not sufficient to complain about the present. One must also have a prescription for the future. Welcome to podcast number 9, The Wealth of Beliefs and Power. Part 1 of the series contained a brief 2-minute promotional and a conceptual foundation for thinking about change as the convergence of economic, political, social, and personal perspectives. Part 2 was a set of 4 podcasts that provided a philosophy for the 21st century. Part 3 contains 3 lessons from modern history for informing the present and for deriving their prescriptive implications for the future. Today, in podcast number 9, I will discuss the second of these 3 lessons, the wealth of power and beliefs. The key concept is that wealth is achieved through the use of excessive power, justified by a belief system that provides an ethical rationalization. Today's podcast has 3 parts. They illustrate the operation of the key concept that wealth is a derivative of power and belief in the historical context of the discovery and the development of the New World. In 1492, Columbus landed in the New World. The impact of the Old World on the New World is less than 600 years old, so the final story is far from complete. But in this short period of modern history, there are already 3 lessons illustrating how wealth is a derivative of power and belief. The 3 parts are, number 1, Surviving Columbus. This is an historical example of the concept. Number 2, Manifest Destiny. This is an illustration of the concept through the emergence of the United States as a nation and a world power. And finally, number 3, The New American Century. This is a current implementation of the concept as it affects the present and our future. Let's take them in turn, one at a time. First, Surviving Columbus. The Spaniards believed that they had a divine mission to conquer the world. The Spanish throne authorized discovery and exploration to find new lands and new people to bring in to the true faith of Christianity. The indigenous people who were thus discovered were offered the choice of either the obedience of submitting to Christianity and paying tribute to the authority of Spanish rule and the Catholic Church, or to be treated as defiant resistors and subjected to punishment, captive labor, or death. When Columbus arrived in the New World, what is now the Dominican Republic, was inhabited by about 500,000 people, with a history of having lived successfully on the island for 5,000 years. Unfortunately for them, they had gold. They were conquered, forced to work as slaves, and then infected with smallpox. Only 27 years later, after the smallpox epidemic 1519, the population of the indigenous people was reduced to 3,000. After the conquest, the Spaniards imported slaves from Africa to supplement the declining native population, and by 1520 had developed sugar plantations to make it a rich colony for Spain for much of the 16th century. This, however, was only a small-scale preview of the Spanish conquest to follow of the far richer Inca and Aztec societies of Peru and Mexico. Hernán Cortés arrived in Mexico City, the capital of the Aztec Empire, on November 8, 1519. The Aztec Emperor Montezuma, as the Spaniards called him, believed Cortés was an ancient god from a time before the Aztec Empire was formed. This ancient god had sailed away over the ocean, but had promised to return in the year that Cortés actually arrived. As a once and future king, Cortés was allowed entry into Mexico City and given lodging in a royal palace. The Spaniards could not believe what they saw. Mexico City was a modern city, with wide canals, shining walls, a huge market, and an aqueduct system for supplying fresh water to what was probably the sixth largest city of the world at that time. The Spaniards were dazzled by the gold in the jewelry and the decorations of the Aztec palaces. Under a false pretense, Montezuma was eventually seized by Cortés and forced to sign papers, making him obedient to the King of Spain. As a ransom, in exchange for his life, he permitted Cortés to strip the gold from the royal palaces and for it to be melted into gold bricks. The shares of this tribute were split among Cortés, the king, and other Spaniards, and a statue of the Virgin Mary was constructed at the site of a holy Aztec temple. Again, under false pretenses, the Spaniards murdered a large group of unarmed Mexican soldiers during a fiesta to consolidate their power. They then killed Montezuma when he was unable to quell the growing popular resistance. Finally, the Spaniards were overwhelmed by the sheer number of Aztecs. Only about one-fourth of them escaped alive from the popular Aztec uprising. But, by then, a smallpox epidemic had begun to devastate the Aztec Empire. More than half of the Indian population died, and the Aztec political structures were shattered. Cortés, resupplied with new forces, returned. And on August 13, 1521, Mexico City was conquered and razed. Four-fifths of the Aztec defenders were murdered, and the rest were branded into slavery. Only a few years later, by 1524, Franciscan missionaries arrived, and the surviving Aztec Indians were baptized into the Christian faith. The Church of Our Lady of Guadalupe was completed with forced labor by 1531 on the site of the most sacred Aztec temple, and a cultural transformation was enforced. By 1550, all Indian people were to learn Spanish and become acculturated. Thus began the establishment of New Spain and the subjugation of the indigenous people for 300 years. All of the Spanish conquistadors were bound by the King of Spain to read the requirement to all foreign people. This was in order to give them a chance to submit to Spanish authority before they were attacked. The requirement was intended to remove the stain of innocent blood from the Spanish king's soul. It informed foreign powers their lands had been donated to Spain in 1493 by Pope Alexander VI. Thus, as an agent of the one true God, the conquistadors gave the indigenous people the opportunity to submit to the obedience of the Pope and the King of Spain. If they did not, that they would be forcefully subjugated to the yoke and obedience of the Church and His Majesty, that women and children would be made slaves, and that the death and destruction to follow would be of their own choice. The divine charge of the conquistadors was to discover new lands and to offer new people their salvation through Christianity. Coronado extended the Spanish influence into the United States in 1540 by claiming the area for Spain. By 1598, the Pueblo Indians had been conquered and offered the choice of either obedience to and acceptance of Christianity or of being considered defiant and subjected to punishment, slavery, or death. The military conquest was followed by priests who, by the mid-1600s, built Roman Catholic missions and collected tributes in the form of labor and goods for the king and the church. To be conquered and subjugated to the yoke of Christianity was to gain the privilege of poverty. The magnitude of the poverty and oppression was so great that in 1680, the Pueblo Revolt, led by Pueblo Indians with traditional spiritual beliefs, drove out the priests and the Spanish authority. The missions were destroyed and the old native spiritual life restored, until reconquested by Spain in 1693. The indigenous people of the southwest of the United States lived under colonial influence of Spain and then Mexico for the next century, until this Spanish authority collided with the western expansion of the United States. The second example is manifest destiny. The Louisiana Purchase in 1803 opened the gates for western expansion in the United States. The Santa Fe Trail first became a trade route with Mexico, and later the path for the annexation of Texas and the Southwest as a result of the war with Mexico in 1846. The western expansion was driven by the ideology that it was the destiny of the United States to take over the continent for the development of the new political invention of democracy, combined with the emerging energy of industrialization. This was the beginning of the modern definition of human progress. The focus of this new definition of human progress was to shift the view from its roots in the church to one of secular nationalism. The arrival of the railroad in Santa Fe in 1879 exemplified this new definition of what was good, and therefore what was in the best interests of humankind, which included the Spanish and the Indians who were currently on the land. Once again, they were offered a new choice, this time of either joining in the spirit of the manifest destiny of America, or to be pushed aside and punished for resisting what was obviously human progress for the common good. This great American experiment of the merger of democratic self-government with capitalism, driven by the new emerging industrial age, ensured an outcome for the American Indian similar to what the Aztecs experienced. Although the time frame was several centuries later and the ideology was different, the process was the same. Power and belief conspired to transfer the wealth of the land from the indigenous people to fuel the growth and the emergence of the United States as the most powerful nation in the world. The Cherokee Nation occupied much of what is now the Southeast United States during the Spanish conquest of Central and South America. They withstood the early Spanish intrusions in the 1540s when Hernando de Soto established Spanish control over Florida. For the next 200 years, the Cherokee Nation traded with the white British enclaves on the East Coast and served as a buffer between them and the French on the West. This permitted the Cherokee to live in a mutually dependent balance of power with the British. However, in 1738, a British slave ship brought smallpox with the trading goods, and in a few years, one half of the Cherokee Nation died from the plague. When the British defeated the French in 1763 to gain control of North America, the British had little need for the now depleted Cherokee Nation. During this period, England had declining control over the governance of the American colonies as the frontiers were pushing steadily westward. The treaties with the Cherokee Nation to give them sovereign control over their lands were in a constant state of renegotiation as they were continuously displaced by European settlers. After American independence, the fate of the American Indian fell into the hands of the new U.S. government. Indian self-determination was in direct opposition to the ideology of the manifest destiny of the new nation. As Ronald Wright described in his book, moving the border did nothing to stop encroachment. Daniel Boone brought swarms of settlers deep inside the Cherokee Nation's heartland. They wore buckskin, ate dried meat, grew maize, took Indian women, wore out the soil, and exterminated the game. Like the conquistadors, they left a ruined country in their wake. Close quote. In 1830, Congress passed the Removal Act, authorizing the resettlement against their will of the Cherokee Nation, who by now were concentrated on federally controlled land in Georgia. In 1838, federal troops rounded up approximately 10,000 individuals who remained of the Cherokee Nation and marched them in what is now known as the Trail of Tears to new lands in Oklahoma. Approximately 4,000 individuals died in the process. Manifest destiny as a belief system was a smooth transition from surviving Columbus, requiring only the substitution of a few words. Thus, the modern age of science and technology began with the manifest destiny and lasted until the end of the Cold War with the triumph of democratic capitalism over communism. But what was only it was actually only a continuation of the previous Spanish pursuit of wealth through power and belief, but this time in the service of the modern era of nation building through industrialization. Manifest destiny has now been replaced by the doctrine for a new American century, which is a similar misguided effort by the United States. Example number 3, the new American century. The project for a new American century is an ideology created largely by the neoconservative Republicans under the presidency of George Bush. The objective of this ideology is to make the United States the sole world power. After the collapse of the Soviet Union, the strategic goal was to ensure that no other nation could challenge the authority of the United States, and to make it clear to the rest of the world that the United States would take unilateral action to protect its global interests. The project for the new American century is based on the premise that what is good for the United States, and in particular, the global expansion of democratic capitalism, is good for the world. It is a foreign policy imbued with the same moral certainty that defined the Spanish conquest and manifest destiny before it. But now, it is a global enterprise devoted to the accumulation of wealth through unlimited economic growth enforced through U.S. military power. To implement this global ideology, it was necessary to undermine the authority of the United Nations. As Gwen Dyer notes, I quote, "To establish an unchallengeable nuclear superiority, restructure the Air Force toward a global first strike force, deploy global missile defenses, control the new international commons of space and cyberspace, withdraw from the Cato Treaty on climate change, sabotage the International Criminal Court, kill proposals for controlling the global trade in small arms, getting the ballistic missile defense program up and running, which required withdrawing from the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty, and for invading Iraq." The neoconservatives had plans to invade Iraq long before 9/11. If the United States was to change the rules for world order, it needed an example, and that example was Iraq. Saddam Hussein was hated. The country was weak from years of economic sanctions. Logistically, it was easy to invade. It had large oil reserves and was strategically located for a strong, permanent military presence by the United States in the Middle East. The attack on the World Trade Centers provided the excuse. The United States lied to the world about the reasons for the invasion and, as we now know, grossly miscalculated the costs and the feasibility of actually occupying Iraq and being seen and welcomed as liberators. After 9/11, the United States had worldwide support for attacking Al-Qaeda, even in Iran. But the invasion of Iraq so alienated the world that the power and influence of the United States has been severely damaged. Instead, we have produced a world crisis from which there is now no apparent solution. The ideology of the new American century is a contradiction of all that America stands for. This misguided pursuit of wealth through power and belief started with the merger of the religious right and the neoconservative policies of George Bush and the Republican Party, and has now run its course, putting the pursuit of empire above all else. The goal of the new American empire, to spread democratic capitalism into the four corners of the globe, based on unlimited growth in the pursuit of the accumulation of corporate wealth, is a prescription for disaster, not only for the United States, but for the world as well. Once we fight to secure energy and to protect global U.S. interests at the expense of all other nations, we will be hated and resisted by the rest of the world. The project for the new American century is one that must be abandoned as a foolish, last-ditch effort to extend the modern era into a new era, one that requires new concepts, new visions, and new leadership. The United States is a pivotal nation at a pivotal time in history for creating the dawn of this new era. As Dyer notes, the world needs the United States back as a participating citizen among the family of nations, and the world needs it back fast. It's not a question of whether the United States will lose in Iraq, but whether it will lose fast enough. So in conclusion, Spanish colonization is to manifest destiny, as manifest destiny is to the new American century. Each one is based on the notion of empire, in which overwhelming military power is used to subjugate people in order to gain control of their wealth. The conquest is based on a belief system that justifies as human progress the devastation produced by the process on the people who happen to be in the way. In this sense, the Incas are to the Cherokee as the Cherokee are to the people of Iraq. Thank you for the day. No, it is not 1960, and I am not living in the past. It's nearly one half of a century later, and I am looking into the future. There's an urgency now to finish what was started then. It has taken another war, another replay of Vietnam, to bring us full circle. But this time, there is the absolute necessity of putting into practice what was then seen as the exuberance of idealistic youth. Well, it's no longer youthful idealism. It is our new reality for both the youth and the adults of today. Either we embrace fundamental economic, political, social, and personal change, or we will forfeit our collective future. The youth and the adults of today have common cause for a cross-generational commitment, a commitment by the youth to lay claim to a viable future, a commitment by adults to revisit the idealism of their past, this time for actually creating a sustainable future. What an exciting time to be alive.